hosts Maya Monell and Aaron Papworth, founders of the Navit Money app, the money management app that uses behavioral science to foster financial wellness. Welcome back to another episode of the Navit podcast. We're your hosts, Maya Monell and Aaron Papworth, and today we're honored to have a moment to sit down with two-time Olympic saber fencer, Dagmara Wozniak. Daga, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
We're so excited to have you.
Yay!
We're all coming at you all from our respective homes all around the U.S., and we're really honored to be able to sit down and talk a little bit more about Daga's career. So I really want to dive right in, Daga, if you're cool with it.
Yeah.
And first, tell our audience a little bit about how you got into the world of fencing. How'd you find it?
I started a bunch of different sports when I was younger, like dancing, gymnastics, karate. And then, you know, the last thing that I was doing was karate, and our club had moved away. And my dad's like, okay, you know, she's got so much energy. Like, we need to find an outlet for her. You know, she's like this little tomboy. and he knew of a fencing club that was about like 15 minutes from our house. It was also at like a Polish cultural foundation. So he said, okay, you know, she can practice a sport that I know from coming from Poland. It's popular in Europe. I could also get her to practice the language, being around other kids who speak, you know, other Polish American kids. And then it just took off from there. You know, like I went into class and I told my dad, I was like, I'm in love with this. I get to, you know, I say it all the time, but it's like, I got to hit other kids with a metal stick and not get in trouble. I'm like, this is pretty, you know, amazing, like the icing on the cake. I was so into combat, and like I took it as like a really cool challenge. If someone, you know, challenged me, I was like all about like, okay, I'm gonna stay on my ground. So fencing was just like another version of that. And right. And like day one, I walked in and I was like, yes, this is what we're gonna do, totally. You know, and that was, I must have been nine. And then, you know, not even less than a year later, started my first national competition at U10. And then it just took off from there.
That's incredible. I'm picturing Aaron's son, who's about that age, who would just love fencing. So
we need to coordinate that. I was just like, you said combat, and I was like, oh, Kaden has to try this.
So I also, in thinking about that, and you are a two-time Olympian, and you were going to the 2020 games. We're obviously recording this in times of post-COVID reality, but did you always have the Olympics in sight?
I didn't. I didn't even think it was a possibility for me. When I started training with my coach, Yuri Gelman, in New York City, my second coach, I was around other Olympians. I was around when, you know, the guys and whoever else was at the club was training for the 2004 Olympics. So, you know, some kids never come into contact with that. For me, it was like, oh, this is a possibility. This is, could be you. And these were my, you know, training partners. So I was exposed to that really early on, but I still never thought like, oh yeah, like I'm on the trajectory to be there. You know, I wasn't like the 9-10-year-old that was like, I'm going to be an Olympic champion. Never thought about that at all. And it wasn't until I was graduating high school in 2006 that, you know, even some people at school were like, okay, what's the next step after high school? You know, training for the Olympics. And I'm like, you're out of your mind. Like, that's not, we're not there yet, you know, just like automatically putting myself down. And then I remember I was on my way to St. John's University, and my personal coach was also the head coach there. And he's like, okay, like, let's talk about this training for, you know, 2018. And I'm like, whoa, like you too, like slow down. Like, where are we, you know, like, this is not something that's, you know, on my radar at all. So I think, I told myself, okay, like I need to first try to make a senior team, and then I can, you know, possibly think about making the Olympic team, which is the next step up. But no, it wasn't something that was like, I need to be an Olympian or I want to be an Olympian. I think I was kind of really pushed into it and forced into it. And by the time I thought that I was capable, it was too late to qualify for 2008. So I was able to go as a replacement athlete, which was cool. I mean, you know, everyone has their story, and I got to like experience the Olympics and, you know, see other athletes that were competing, and like the whole experience without really having the pressure of performing. Mm-hmm. And then I told myself, like, okay, after 08, like, I'm not going to be a bench warmer again. Like, I'm going to qualify. I'm going to do this. Like, the goal is to, you know, get on the stage. So that was kind of my whole Olympic, you know.
I love this so much. And I have one question about, so do you think it was the mindset prior to 2008 that was like, no, I'm not good enough, that actually, because everyone saw it in you and you then went on to become an Olympic athlete. So do you really think it was a mental thing, or was it just that you physically weren't ready and it, you know, you were young too?
I mean, there are definitely aspects of me being young and maybe not being experienced enough, but, you know, there's two ways to go about it. There's some people who really exemplify what kind of athlete and how well they can do first time around. You know, like they're the star when they don't have any pressure on them. Then you have the people who crack under pressure first time, but with experience to become more confident and more, you know, and then they shine. So for me, I think it was like, it was a combination of both a little bit. Like, yes, I didn't have the exposure and the experience to be on the, you know, the stage in terms of seeing these senior competitors and knowing what my competition pool was. But also, I mean, huge, huge negative mindset. I'm not good enough. I can't do this. You know, even I would, you know, sometimes win a competition and people would congratulate me and I would say, no, that's still not good enough, you know. But some people were like, how much better can you get than winning? And I'm like, no, I still didn't win the right way. So there was always a negative, you know, connotation that I would put on myself growing up. Yeah.
How do you think you overcame that? For all of you, we're going totally off script of our main topic. I promise we'll reel back in. But I think this is, you know, in days of COVID, and we're talking a lot about these negative coping behaviors that you have with your money, that you have with, you know, other aspects of your life. Like, to us, you know, why we were so compelled by your message and we're so honored to have you representing the brand is that, you know, you're an athlete and you're a professional athlete and you're really like our modern day hero, right? The athletes are really our walking modern day heroes. And that's because they overcome these amazing internal battles with themselves. And I, you know, how did you overcome that?
I mean, thank you, first of all. You know, that's very heartwarming to hear that. But what you see in me as like classifying me as like a modern day hero, like what you guys started, I'm just like, I could never do something like that. Like, you know, put a company together. I'm serious. There's,
you
know,
so you're based, it's all perspective. That's what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah, it definitely has a lot of perspective. But I think when you're put into like this environment, you know, I feel like I've been an athlete my whole life. And right. So for me, like failure is part of the process. Failure is something that like I had to overcome. But in terms of the negative mindset, there's so many factors, unfortunately, that created to that. And I think I still have a lot of tendencies, you know, and it doesn't have to be only with athletics. You know, I've gotten injured. I tell myself I'm getting older. I've been told like, you know, you better start thinking about kids now, or, you know, there's all these things that people try to implement, you know, or attack you with to say like your time's running out, and that makes you doubt yourself. So it's the same thing with, I have to say, like being a female, I'm just like investment. Like, that's a really scary word. Like, I don't want anything to do with that because I don't know anything, but you know, I have the capability to pick up a book and do some research, but there's a stigma that like women aren't good with money, or, you know, like they can't be as strong athletes and be the best athlete. I mean, for me, the best athlete in the world is Serena Williams. There's no question. Mental, physical, like all the areas of being like the best. I mean, this woman dominates, and now it's motherhood, like being, yeah, you know, an, yeah, entrepreneur and a business owner. I mean, she's just like slam dunking on all fronts. So I think, you know, there has been a lot of like, you're a female, you're not going to be good enough no matter like kind of how hard you try, in all honesty. And I think that, you know, instead of taking that second to break through that, you just shy away from it. And then it gets harder and harder and harder. So not afraid to say it. I've seen many sports psychologists, and now I've been working with a confidence coach who, I don't know, like just everything clicked. And I'm just like, I'm not going to do this bleep anymore, you know, yeah, to like, yeah, put myself, yes, down. Like, I'm too old for this, you know, I'm tired. Yeah. Like, let's just make some moves. And if people don't like it, then I don't care. I mean, I'm over it.
God, I love it so much.
I know, I love it so much. And you're just like, you've absorbed all the, like, so many different aspects of our cultural biases that we have that are like in the streets right now, we're fighting about. Now we're talking about women and athletics. And so one thing that we talk about in Navid is reframing. I don't know if your confidence coach does this, but like, so the belief was that I'm not good enough or that a man is the ideal athlete. And the opposite is, of course, no, you are 100% good enough. You have all the athletic skills, and women athletes are badass, right? And like, they are, it's like such a beautiful thing to just shift that mindset. And that allows you to be free to not give a shit. We can actually swear it's our podcast, so you can say whatever you want.
I didn't know.
Yeah, maybe not for under like 16 audience, but
right.
I totally agree with that. And that's actually, you know, I knew after my surgery in the summer, it's like, okay, this is going to be tough. And, you know, I went to the first competition that I kind of could have tried to make a comeback. But I know that I still wasn't healed enough. But, you know, there were like three competitions or three or four left to qualify. And I'm like, I'm down to the wire. Mm-hmm. And either I do this, and I didn't trust myself enough to work really hard, come back stronger, and then bang out a really good result. So I really forced myself to compete in Montreal, which now that I look back on it, I was like, that shouldn't have happened. I should have still, you know, been at home. But I bombed it. The first senior competition that I ever fenced in 2007, I didn't make it to the second round. I lost every single match. So I just lost, you know, just burned in a fiery flame in the preliminary round. And now, you know, here I am 20 plus something years later, and the same shit happened. And I'm just like, what does this mean? Does this mean it's over? Can I pick myself back up? It was such a check for me. And the first thing I wanted to do would be like, it's over. I give up. Like, I can't make this comeback, because people that I know I would have never lost to, per se, I can't get a single point on them. And this is the first round. How can I possibly compete with the people that I've, you know, been able to dominate before? But it just seems so helpless and hopeless. And so I actually had reached out to my agent. I'm like, listen, I've worked with a lot of sports psychologists. I need to find someone who comes at this from left field, you know, like, mm-hmm. I need a different angle. And so he's like, listen, I have someone, CG, And so he's like, he's like, I have someone, she's not a sports psychologist. She's a confidence coach, Kristen. So let's see if that works. And, you know, just talking one session with her, I'm like, this is something that I could reframe my mindset in order to like go into these last one or two competitions and just like wreak like havoc. Like, let's just light this on fire, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was, you know, I was telling her, I'm like, you know, through the injury, even before the injury, I have huge, you know, body image issues, and I work so hard. And then I go to the competitions and I say, you know, I'm not as skinny as these girls. So let me in my mind wipe away all the hard work that I've put in. And now I'm, you know, starting behind everyone instead of coming in and being like, I'm confident I can do this. I've worked really hard. So, you know, we started doing different tactics to really kind of say, like, today I work my ass off and it counts. Tomorrow I'm going to try to do the same. So I remember I went into the competition and she's like, if you have a fear, type it and then say what your truth is. So I said, I was like, I'm worried about, like, again, comparing myself and like not focusing on the thing that's most important. I'm worried about not doing this, not being able to really like overcome this injury and like still fencing on tons and tons of pain. And then I was like, no, I've worked my ass off for this. I know I deserve to come in and feel respected on the strip, and I'm not going to compare myself. And I'm just like rattling off. I think it's probably 3 a.m. her time. I'm up, I'm about to compete. And I'm just like, no, I can do this. I'm confident. And, da, 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 da. And I went out and just tunnel vision, banged out a top eight and like put myself from like ninth position to third, and like really put myself, you know, in the running to like 100% qualify for Tokyo. So I mean, I owe a lot to her. And it, and reframing, you know, like not to go on a tangent, and I just gave a beautiful story.
No, it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
I talk too much.
No, I love it.
The reframing is 100%, you know, it's valid in any field of life. It's valid in relationships, it's valid in athletics, it's valid in financial, you know, literacy. It's everywhere. Reframing is what's going to get you out of what hasn't been working and then moving on to something that does.
Yeah. I mean, we could talk about that one topic for the whole time. So I like will definitely be having you back here soon. And I think that, you know, frankly, that really leads us into this, the primary topic that we wanted to talk to Dago about today, which is around kind of the life cycle of an athlete and, you know, how you have to practice so much patience to get to that, you know, get to that fire moment and succeed and hit your goals, but also to realize, like, you know, you also have a really short window of time. This is not like, you know, me going along my little marketing career for 40 plus years, right? Like, this is a very short window of time that you have to perform at your level. And a lot of people, as we are coming out of COVID, you know, there's this whole kind of fire retirement early movement going on, which we really like to think more about freedom to do what you want. But, you know, as an athlete, you typically have these shorter career periods. So have you thought about what retirement from fencing might look like?
Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of a hard, you know, thing to swallow because I don't want my career to be over, but like, I'm not 18 anymore. So, you know, things take longer to recover and heal. So I know that, like, you know, again, reframing, like everything is going to come to an end eventually. And how am I going to use my time wisely and the things that I've experienced to help inspire, educate, you know, lead anyone else that wants to pursue what I did, or even to just show like, hey, there's so much parallelism, you know, with athletics and everything else. You know, my best friend's a business owner. And so many times I'm like dealing with, you know, difficult clients, difficult teammates, you know, management here. Like there's so many things that are, you know, in line the same as in all aspects of life. So for me, I'm just like, okay, what's my next step? One was coming to terms that it's on the, you know, I'm at the end of my career, I would say. Even if after Tokyo, if I compete and then, you know, I tell myself another 4 years, that'll be what? Probably the max that I plan on doing. So it's, you know, it's majority of my career is now behind me. And I'm okay to say that because, like I said, you know, got to make every day count. And yeah, I've thought about what retirement looks like, and I want to stay involved in athletics. I want to stay involved in, like I said, educating and inspiring athletes. Doesn't necessarily have to mean that it's fencing. Everyone has said like you should open up a fencing club, and I like the management side of things. I like possibly even being like a I don't know how to explain it, but you know, every athlete kind of needs guidance and nutrition and planning, things like that to kind of help them become a well-rounded athlete, as opposed to I just went harder, faster, stronger like myself for however many years. Now I need to undo everything I did because of all the damage and psychological, physical, all that stuff. So starting that at a younger age, being able to expose kids to have the proper tools, and also to financially have the proper tools. I mean, I got audited and it was the worst experience of my life. And I felt like I was left, you know, with my hands tied behind my back, and I had no knowledge that it could happen, what to do, how to go about it.
Right. No. And I think, you know, oh, go ahead, Erin.
No, please. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, I think when we first met Dago, this was one of the key things that really resonated with us is the parallel and to being an athlete and being just an everyday human going about life and figuring out, you know, what the financial services industry, like how to navigate the system, how you can create better outcomes for yourself. And I think, you know, that really speaks into this, like, how you imagine retirement as we're talking about this topic of, you know, like how most people that go into retirement have a steady income, right? Or have a steady monthly income that they've saved up for. And that's not the athletes. I don't think that's really that's what you all are, you know, you land on, right? That's not really what you have at the end of your career. And also you're young, like you're still super young in most cases of when we're talking about pro athletes, that they can go on and have another career or another two or three careers. So do you imagine retirement from your sport will look differently in terms of the kinds of, you know, income opportunities and how, like, how are you starting to think about these other wealth generating avenues that you have for yourself?
Well, you know, one thing that I've been trying to also, you know, educate myself on is it doesn't, right now my living expenses outweigh, you know, what I'm earning. So it's kind of hard to get ahead in order to be able to like, live comfortably. If our standings change, then our money changes per month. So it's a little this, you know, stress in the back of our mind. Like if I don't perform well, my money is going to get taken away. You can have bad performances at work or good performances, but at the end of, you know, the 2 weeks, like you'll probably still get your paycheck or the bonus at the end. So it's right. Our roller coaster. We feel it right away, right. In terms of having our money taken away or added. So I think for me, sponsorship opportunities during a time like this are also really important because, again, it takes that. It's more of, I think, stress reliever because now I can allot the money in terms of what I need in order to get ahead of being an athlete. But after the fact, in terms of, you know, closing the book on being a professional athlete, I think I have a lot of I guess you could say success as what I've accomplished and what I've done, that I almost feel like my possibilities are endless, be it a motivational speaker, opening up a fencing club. Like I think I've developed a lot of, you know, hard soul, hard, you know, tough skin to just like take that energy that I have of being a competitive athlete and just literally throwing it into something else. Cause it's like, I would like to max out my time as being an athlete physically for as long as I can. But that doesn't mean, you know, my brain stopped working or whatever the case may be. So to be able to apply myself to something else post-career, I'm definitely going to have, you know, the drive and the willingness to do whatever the hell, you know, kind of comes my way.
You know, that's one of the things that was so fascinating to me when we first met, when you were explaining a little bit of how the like athletic system works and how is it specific to fencing the way that compensation works, or is that kind of across all of these elite?
I know for fencing, I can confirm for sure that's how our system works, but I think some other sports, it might be a little bit different.
Yeah. So could you just walk us through that just for the audience? Because I think what's so interesting to me is that you are competing at an international level representing our country, you know, like you earned a medal, and yet the system is set up so that you are not, like, you're not consistently earning money over time in order for those 4 years to get to the next right. Olympic. So what, and that ultimately for then retirement planning, you can't, like, there's nothing, as you alluded to, there's no stability that you can then, you know, use to plan. And what we talk about, this freedom idea, like, so you have a lot of resilience, you have a lot of empowerment, but the system in which you are functioning is not giving you something steady that you can really use to plan. So you ultimately will have to recreate yourself. And I know, I mean, with the skill sets you have built as an Olympic athlete, you'll be able to do that so easily. But it's a really fascinating thing that, you know, we look as just a spectator in the Olympics, like this amazing woman with such an incredible strength and her ability and athletic prowess. And yet my country, like my system did not support her to do that. It's so interesting. Could you speak a little bit to like how the whole system works?
Yeah. So right now we were actually able to, I mean, it's not, you know, a significant amount to really make a dent financially, but if you're top 9, top 12 in the country, then our organization gives you about $200, $300 a month to supplement any kind of training. Now on a world level, based off of my ranking, there's brackets, and the higher you are, the more money you make. But let's say you're teetering on, you know, I don't remember the exact breakdown, but if you're in top 16, let's say you're making 3,000. And then I do not so well at the next competition. Starting that next month, if I'm at 17, I've gotten $500 taken away. So now it's like, do I cut out the things that I was doing using that money in order to, you know, not go into financial debt, or do I just close my eyes and keep doing it? I can tell you that that was my big approach, was regardless of how my fundings were going up and down, how they were fluctuating, I was just like, this is critical for me to get to the next level or to stay able to compete against, you know, the top athletes. So I did it, and I put myself, you know, sometimes in the ground, but I just told myself, okay, there's an end goal here, and that's, you know, to win the Olympic medal. And one thing that, you know, my boyfriend and I, through reading some books, like it's about having financial literacy, right? So just because if I know how to manage $1,000, I'll know how to manage a million. If I don't know how to manage $1,000, just because I have more money doesn't mean that I'm going to know how to, you know, what to do with it. Totally. You know, wealth does not create, you know, financial literacy. It's literacy creates wealth. So that's one thing that I told myself, regardless of the situation I'm in, I gotta know how to deal with that. So the higher, you know, the more results you have, they do give us some result incentive. There's top three for team events. You get a certain amount of money for first place, second place, third place. And then, like I said, it goes by per month. They look through the results, look through the points, and then based off of the new ranking, they give you money based off of where you are.
I'm curious to know if, does that fluctuate as well based on their fundraising, like the national organization's fundraising efforts for the year?
I'll be honest. I'm not 100% sure with that. I know that the monthly stipend that we get in terms of like the bigger chunk, it's based off of our international ranking, and that comes from the USOC. That doesn't come from our federation.
Right. Got it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, essentially I think, you know, I can't speak for all sports, but I know that, you know, it might not be that much more money in swimming and track and mm-hmm. things like that. That's where the big sponsors come in. The athletes that are really highlighted, you know, get to pick up these great endorsement deals. And, you know, it's the side things that are really making someone financially stable. So, you know, as an athlete, if you're trying to find the time to work a part-time job or do some odd jobs here and there, that's what's really giving you more financial stability. But it's taking away time from training. So it's kind of
you
know, it's a push pull.
Yeah. So interesting.
One of the things I'm really excited about for you in your next chapter is thinking about those goals and, you know, thinking about what comes next for sure. But, you know, so I know you have some things in the works because you are brilliant and of course will always thrive. But how are you thinking about funding some of those goals and moving forward off of, you know, moving away from athleticism and elite sport and moving into another source of income?
I think the number one thing is there's a lot of, you know, organizations and connections to be involved in and people to meet and talk to, and just hoping that, you know, there are people who are in line with my visions and will find some kind of, you know, relationship to also want to be a part of that. I think that's like the biggest thing right now. And I've always tried to be really truthful and honest with people about who I am, what I like to do, and share that when I finally have a concrete plan of like what I want to work on and what I want to do.
Totally. I love it. I'm so excited to see. Well, first of all, I'm so excited to see you in Tokyo. It feels very far away right now, but if we ever get there.
I actually have a question about that. Do you have to re-qualify if you had already qualified?
Well, they had frozen the standings from where we left off. So after, I'm not mathematically officially qualified. I've put myself in a very good position, but there are officially, when we can start competing again, there will be two competitions that have to happen in order to finish out what would have been our regular qualification path.
Got it. Gosh, this is incredible. It's like you train for 4 years and now you have to train for another year. I can't imagine.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it's also great that we do get a you know, payout in terms of a bronze medal or a silver medal or a gold medal. We have to pay taxes on that. But, you know, I hate when people are kind of like, oh, like, I don't know. There's sometimes he's like, quit your crying. Like, it's just, I mean, it's 4 years of training for one paycheck, you know, like, how would you feel if you were working your 9-to-5 job, sometimes working overtime, and then 4 years go by and someone's like, yeah, like, it wasn't good enough. You know, it's a hard
thing. Or you don't, yeah. Right, or you don't get a medal. Ugh.
So,
but I think that also speaks to your level of resilience, right?
Yes.
I mean, there's a reason why, you know, you continue to push forward, right? Because you've been knocked down before. I think most athletes that were planning on 2020 have now gone through this process of saying, like, okay, coming to terms with it, right? Accepting, like, yeah, the reality that we're in right now and knowing that, you know, you're going to go back more powerful and stronger than ever, maybe because of a rest period, but also to know that, like, you've navigated your way, pardon the pun, around this really odd time in our world.
And I mean, that's, I feel like there's no other mentality to have, but through hearing some other people, you know, how they're taking the whole COVID delay and all that in terms of competition. I mean, I know there's a couple of people that are ready to back out and just like, okay, I'm moving on to the next thing. So, I mean, power to you to make that decision. But I would just say, look at the mentality of like why you're making that decision. Is it because you feel like you're not strong enough to, you know, withstand a whole nother year? Are you really more, you know, focused on a job or going back to school? So I would say like reevaluate your priorities and see why exactly you would want to be stepping away. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you're the next so-and-so, you know, Serena make an impact on the sport, it'd be heartbreaking to see, you know, you just walk away because you're just like, oh, I'm upset because everything got delayed.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the fortitude and the resilience, and I mean, we talk a lot about resilience, like the ability to be knocked down and get back up. I mean, the people competing at your level exemplify that, I think, to the highest degree of human physically possible.
Yeah.
And it's so mental as much as it is. And we talk about that a lot in the financial space. Like half of it is your mental approach to finances. If it's fear and scarcity, you're just, to your point, you're starting 10 feet back. If it's like, I can do this, I'm worthy, like abundance is in my realm of possibility, then you're just like, you're starting on the right foot to be able to keep pushing forward and figuring it out as you go and building that resilience.
And I think that there's, you know, what you're talking about with the resilience, like it's, like I said, there's so many similarities between athleticism and anything else that like sometimes people really separate it and they're just like, no, like I couldn't do, okay, maybe it's a little bit physically more taxing, but you know, like every day I'm doing things 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 times wrong in order to get it right one time. And then after I got it right one time, I have to go kind of back to the drawing board and do it 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 times again to get it right, to, you know, naturally come out three more times. So failure is not inevitable. It has to happen. But I feel, you know, when it comes to something like finances or school or, you know, even relationships, we're afraid to make the wrong choice because we feel right, like the repercussions of doing something incorrectly, like going to the wrong investment or doing the wrong things with my money, I don't think I can recover from that. But honestly, like you can, and people will, and people have filed for bankruptcy and have been able to come back swinging with like such successful businesses. So it's like, it's all the same. It's just like you said, it's all about reframing your mentality and like what you're capable of.
Totally. Oh,
so beautiful. That's why we love you, Daga.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm curious, I want to keep with that topic. And what do you tell the younger fencers in your network that, you know, look up to you for guidance of, and maybe are starting to navigate this or maybe conflicted between going to college and kicking off a career? Like, what do you tell them about staying resilient and learning to fail is really what we're talking about.
Right. I think the number one thing I try to really portray to younger athletes is stop comparing yourself. You know, everyone, mm-hmm. is like, well, you know, I don't look like this on Instagram, or people always go to college and get scholarships, or I should be getting a job because it's kind of the safe route, in my opinion, in terms of pursuing, you know, an amateur then professional career in athleticism. You know, I was at it for 8+ years before I got my first medal in the Olympics. So that's a long time to like kind of keep at something. So I'm just, you know, stop looking at other people. And if everybody lived the same way, life would be so boring that I don't know what joy there would be. You know, or if you get married at 25 or you get married at 30, like, who cares? It doesn't matter. Everyone's life is so different, you know?
Totally.
You're saying, I mean, I love that. Yes. We're so with you because you're saying exactly what we say on the financial side. Like, while we all navigate the same financial system, you know, like, yes, APR is APR, interest is, you know, school loans are school loans. Right. Like, it's the same system. And there's various levels of access. There's, you know, like, we can't sit here protests going on our street, not acknowledge, like, there is a different access point for sure to that system, but the system is the same. But once you understand that, the comparison, like, there's absolutely zero point in me comparing, like the three of us on this call have similarities. We are women, we are like white women, we are smart, we have, you know, these things, but ultimately our financial picture is completely different. We have different families, we have different careers, we have completely different world experiences. So why start comparing ourselves, like, in the financial sense? Like, take it, understand the system, which is what you're saying, understand that how to succeed as an athlete, and then figure out your own path and figure out your own journey through that, and ultimately, again, same thing, that is starting on the right foot, because you're ultimately starting with, like, I can do this. This is my life. I'm internally powered. Like, how am I going to do this? As opposed to, like, oh, I'm not good enough for all these people. I'm supposed to be like this. When it ultimately, like, you can't be like that. So why try? You
know? Yeah. Totally. And there's so many moving parts, you know, like you said, like, what works for me is not going to work for you. You know, like, I live with just my boyfriend. Like, someone might be married. Someone might have 5 kids. So it's so crappy to, like, compare you know, my situation to anybody else, because it's so not the same on all fronts. And I think the number one thing is communication. You know, if I don't know what to do, ask. You know, if I don't know where to put my money or what to do with my money, ask someone. Like, I never, honestly, my parents came to this country and, like, they barely came with anything. So my sister was so resilient. She got a job at 15. I mean, this girl just, you know, took it to the, she's like, I want to be able to have a stable life for my family in the future and, like, for myself. And not that she couldn't rely on my parents, but my parents didn't have the tools coming to a new country. My sister learned the language. There was a lot of things that my sister did for my parents in order to, you know, with their jobs, with paperwork and all that stuff. So I think, you know, having the ability to go out and search for something, it's not taboo to say, I don't know. I don't understand why it's so difficult, you know? And same thing with me. I was just like, I have no idea how to invest money. I have no idea how to save money. People think, oh, I just need to make more money in order to pay off what I have. That doesn't work. You make more money, you spend more money. And true. I, you know, reaching out, using tools, and just not being afraid to say, I have no idea what's going on, but I'm asking someone who does, and I'll figure it out.
I want to ask you one more question before we go into our kind of concluding lightning round. And it's such a selfish question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. How is Navit helping you think about financial independence and planning for your goals, Jaga?
Well,
but no pressure. You answered truthfully.
Yeah, exactly. We don't do promotions on our podcast, so we've got to throw it in. No,
for sure. Thank you so much for taking me on as, you know, sponsoring me. That's definitely helped me a lot, more than you guys could know. And also, I don't like to support companies that are not in line with my values and, you know, what I stand for. So even, you know, meeting with you guys and talking to you has been really awesome and a blessing. So thank you for supporting me and being able to let me do what I love to do, because, you know, I'm dedicated to the sport no matter how much support I have, I guess. But to see people stand behind me, I can tell you it doesn't matter. It takes just one person to support you to really feel like a huge, just uplifting feeling. So to have, you know, a company behind me is just like so badass. Using the app and learning how to better manage my finances and even being able to have access. I know not everyone might have access to you guys, but being able to talk to you about how to like balance money, credit card debt and things like that puts me in a lot more of financial stability to be able to feel like I can take this world on and feel a lot more comfortable making, you know, financial decisions for myself. So, you know, I'm not afraid to admit that like I kind of didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I just kind of sucked it up and said, you know, I might be like an Olympic bronze medalist, but like help me manage my money, please. So through that, yeah, super thankful and like I said, using the app, figuring out how to do this and just, you know, moving on to the next bigger and better thing.
Well, it's been such a joy to have you as one of our navigators in our network. So, and frankly, I feel like you've taught us just as much as we've taught you about, frankly, how we can help young athletes and, you know, aspiring athletes, as well as those who are currently trying to navigate the system like alone. And I think, you know, we follow the Serena Williamses of the world, right? The people that are thrown onto the Nike ads, but really there's the whole support system of athletic culture in our country and globally that really fosters, that allows those few people to stay on top, and that, you know, that fosters their sport and promotes them forward. And I think, you know, more companies should be engaging with athletes across different sports, because you know, everybody needs help. And that's, I think it's important to realize that like, that's how you all make money. Like whether, you know, you're just starting out in your career or you're Serena Williams, like they all make money on sponsorship. It's not coming from,
I didn't know it was such a high percentage. Like I knew they were making money, but I didn't know it was what sustains a lot of people's ability to still, to compete and to train. So that's really incredible. Yeah.
And it prevents, and I mean, we talk about socioeconomic injustices and the things that are happening right now. Like, unfortunately, the reality of a lot of sports is that it prevents what could be the next Serena Williams from entering in. And I'm a tennis player, so I'm sorry I keep referring to her. But, you know, it prevents a whole generation of kids to rethink their decisions because it's not the safe route. And so, and we need more of you taking the not so safe route to inspire us all to be a little bit better in our day to day. So thank you. Okay. Enough of the gushy. I'll go into our lightning round, which we ask all of our navigators that come on the podcast. But, you know, we kind of dove into a couple of questions around the next generation of Olympic fencers. But how has the advice that you've given them shifted recently?
How has it shifted recently? I mean, I think that, you know, there's a, in terms of shifting priorities, and even something as like, we've become is so involved in like this digital age of like everything that I do on social media is like means that I've done something. But that's not necessarily the case. So I told them like, you got to focus on what you want to do. If you want to be the best, then you have to worry about being the best, not about, you know, trying to look like the Kim K and trying to be an elite athlete. Like you have to know where your priorities are. You can't focus on wanting to be the best fencer in the world, not necessarily practicing as hard as, you know, other athletes practice, and then kind of cry about the results. So that's like my little tough love that I said, like, if you want it, commit yourself to it, and then that's it. Then, you know, you can, one, you kind of have the right to cry about, you know, not doing well, but also you can regroup and move on to the next thing. That's like saying, you know, I want to be the next, you know, Bill Gates or whatever, and then not doing a single thing to get yourself, you know, to that position. So I think, you know, making your efforts count. I've seen some athletes be able to really kind of put that stuff aside and do what they're, you know, what they want to do and not be afraid to really be the truth, you know, that they want to be. If that makes sense.
I love that.
I know you're like giving me so many tidbits. That thing of like just because you didn't do it in the digital space doesn't mean you didn't do it. Or it's like, if it doesn't live in digital, doesn't mean you didn't do it. That is really helpful for me right now, because especially like in this moment of protests and COVID right. and things like that, okay, that world of digital is very vocal, but like, what am I actually doing on a daily basis?
Right.
And am I true to that? My cause, like my beliefs and
yeah.
if it's not there, it doesn't mean I didn't do it.
Right. I mean, like I don't have much to donate, but I donated where, you know, I thought would make an impact or, you know, just to help. But what does it mean? Yeah. It never happened because I don't post it on social media.
Yeah.
So, I hate that this has become like this solid thing of like, if it's not out there, it didn't happen, or you're not doing enough.
Right.
You know, do I have to film myself calling, you know, these offices in order to, it doesn't make sense to me anymore. And it almost says like, oh, just because I put it out there, like my hands are done. But if you're still an ass, you know, in the real world, what does that even matter? So,
yeah.
So true.
Love it.
So next question, how do you foster a healthy money mindset?
How do I foster a healthy money mindset? Well, like I said, you know, I'm trying to make sure that whatever I'm reframing my mindset in order to, you know, understand what my situation is. So,
yeah.
If I'm using, you know, if my goal is paying off my debt, I'm not looking at clothes. I'm not looking at, you know, things to buy for the apartment. You know, I'll be able to reach a goal, just like in athletics. I'm only going to reach a goal when I can go to a competition, or I'm going to, you know, give myself a treat when I've practiced this many hours or done this. So it's the same thing, like looking at it like that. Don't be so you know, turning a blind eye and saying like, I don't know what my financial situation is, but like, let me go out with my friends. Like, it's okay to say no. And it's okay to figure out ways how you can invite friends over, tell them to bring some stuff, you know, to, you know, just yeah. kind of like, yeah. you know, you're not isolating yourself from the world, but you're also not digging yourself into an unmanageable hole.
Totally.
Beautiful.
So important. Yeah. And lastly, when was the last time you nabbed something?
The last time I nabbed something definitely has to be with, you know, my whole surgery. And that was it was difficult on all fronts, financially, physically, emotionally, psychologically. It just hit me like, I mean, a ton of bricks, and I knew it was going to be difficult. But you never know how something is until you're actually in it. And then it's just yeah. like, you know, you try to mentally prepare yourself, but once you're in it, it's like a whole different monster. So, you know, not being able to do like the side jobs that I was doing in order to kind of, you know, supplement my training, I physically went from like 1,000 miles an hour to zero. And it was just like, there was only so much you can Netflix and chill. I think after one day, I was like, I'm done with this. And my boyfriend's like, this is day one. And I'm like, I'm not going to make it. I still have 2 weeks. I have to completely, you know, non-weight bearing. So like, what the hell am I going to do? You know, there was that, and then being, you know, taking care of myself. He wasn't home all the time. Cooking a simple meal, going to the bathroom seemed like, you know, Mount Everest. And then thinking about, I'm losing my funding because I'm dropping lower and lower and lower in the ranking. Thankfully, my federation was actually able to help me out. So, you know, it was just so many things that were happening all at once. And I was like, okay, I can only focus on what I can control. And that right now is healing. And I just need to meditate the shit out of this and
yes.
you know, focus on what I can do. And that was, don't get me wrong, that was difficult.
Yeah.
Like I
yeah.
still had days where I was like, it's over. Like, I'm not going to be able to come back from this, you know, gaining weight. And then, you know, how you gain 5-10 pounds and you're just like, what is happening? Like, I'm just losing control. So yeah. yeah, that was the last thing I nabbed it and nabbed the shit out of it.
You nabbed the shit out of that. Now you're back and you are competing and you're, yeah.
And you're owning it. I mean, like, you're figuring out how to supplement your income. I mean, you're doing all these different things. You're an entrepreneur in your own mind too. And, you know, and you're really figuring out the next step. It's been such a joy and an honor to reconnect with you, Daga. We're so excited to release this episode to the world. And really, like I said, so honored to have you a part of our network and frankly, as a beacon of hope and a resource for our other navigators. So thank you so much for joining us today.
And I have one thing to end it on.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people, you know, say like, why? Like, just always ask yourself, why not me? You know? Why can't I be the next person to like purchase a house or you know, have financial stability or be the next best athlete? Just think like, why not me? Like what says you can't have the power to do these things?
Beautiful. Exactly. What says, I love that. Do you want to tell everybody where to reach you?
Me.
Where they can go follow you?
They can follow me on Instagram. My handle is Dagmara Wozniak, my name, no spaces or dots. And all
and
my
we'll spell that in the notes.
Yeah, leave it in the notes. I love it. Well, and I'm sure you'll see her on another episode or two. For now, thanks all for listening and stay well.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Daga.
Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Care to continue the convo? You can connect with fellow navigators in the app or on our Let's Navit Facebook page. Oh, and be sure to get social with us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Let's Navit. That's LetsNavit. And finally, wherever you're listening to this podcast, it would really help us if you would take a minute to rate, review, and subscribe. That's it for today's episode. Until next time,
let's navigate!